presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I think one of Georgia's SEC East opponents this season is going to receive an unmerciful beatdown from UGA. And I think the evidence could not be more clear, and over the course of the next couple of minutes, I want to explain to you why. Kentucky offensive coordinator Eddie Gran is back at it again. As the Wildcats get ready to begin their spring practice, Gran met with the media. Ben Roberts, a writer for the Lexington paper there, it's Kentucky.com, is the website. And you may remember, the backstory on all of this is that there had been some chatter about, ooh, was Eddie Gran offered the Georgia offensive coordinator job? Gran at one point in time said he was. Yesterday he was asked, so how serious did it get between you and Georgia for this job? And Gran gave a clear answer. Doesn't mean he's telling the truth, but he gave a clear answer. Here's what Eddie Gran had to say. It was serious in the point that they offered the job. It came down to, I love this community. I love this administration. Dr. Eli Capiluto, or whatever his name is, Mitch Barnhart, that's the athletic director. The guy that I work for is fantastic. And I've become a part of this community, and I love it, Eddie Gran has to say. I think we're doing some things that are special, and those were all part of the decision-making when I decided to stay. So Eddie Gran writes a story in which he's the hero, treated as the guy who spurned Big Bad Georgia to stay a part of a Kentucky team and be a part of I don't know what in the future of the Wildcats. After all, they do lose a lot of talent off this past year's team. But that's the story that Eddie Gran is saying right there in the pages of Kentucky.com. And as I've said, this has been kind of going on for a while. You know, our buddy Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio, a regular fixture on the Feinbaum show, taking some jabs at Dog Nation and taking some jabs at Georgia fans because, according to Jones, Dog fans just simply are slow to believe that Gran really could have been offered the UGA offensive coordinator job. In fact, here is our buddy Matt from the Feinbaum show taking his shot at Dog Nation on this Eddie Gran story. Let's go back in the past.
I was prepared because I thought you were going to come on here and grill me about Dog Nation, and you got the whole thing and you didn't do it, so I appreciate it.
Well, that would be my final question.
Did I just set myself up there for that?
Well, no, you just, I was snoozing, so you woke me up. What's the deal?
So Georgia offered Eddie Gran to be their offensive coordinator, and he turned it down, Kentucky's offensive coordinator, and the Georgia people, understandably, did not want to be seen as having gotten turned down by a Kentucky offensive coordinator, so they got all their reporters to say it didn't happen. And Georgia fans have just been angry, and all these Dog Nation people call. And it's been very funny to watch because I thought, if you're Georgia, why do you care? You guys are above it all. But they just have had some fans kind of lose their minds in the last couple weeks because they lost their offensive coordinator to Tennessee and got turned back down by Kentucky's offensive coordinator.
You're speaking of just Dog fans, not that website, Dog Nation.
Correct? No, that website has been part of it,
Oh, no, okay. Doubt.
Their people were very much like, oh, the KSR guy made it up.
So let me speak on behalf of Georgia fans first, and then I'll get to the Dog Nation part of this too. Georgia fans don't care about this. Georgia fans don't know who Eddie Gran is. Georgia fans, very little attention has been paid one way or another to Eddie Gran. This is a big deal for Kentucky fans in Kentucky because Eddie Gran's trying to cast himself as a hero. But in terms of how Georgia fans react to this, by and large, Georgia fans don't know who Eddie Gran is because Kentucky is not on Georgia's radar because Georgia steps on them like a bug every time they play, including this past November up in Lexington with the SEC East on the line. They ran through Kentucky like Kentucky was barely standing there. So, you know, from a Georgia standpoint, Eddie Gran does not move the needle for Georgia fans, but it is probably a pretty big deal for Wildcats fans that Gran is talking about his ability to stare down the beast and say no to Georgia. But as far as the Dog Nation role in all of this, yes, Dog Nation did refute, and I believe it was Matt Jones who had this first. Dog Nation was able to refute the original Matt Jones report on Eddie Gran and the Georgia offensive coordinator job. It was Mike Griffith who wrote this. Mike will join us in a couple of minutes. If you want to go back in time to the piece that Griffith wrote about about Eddie Grant. What he said was the Georgia football offensive coordinator position was never offered to Kentucky assistant coach Eddie Grant, who may have parlayed that perception into the leverage he needed to get a new contract with the Wildcats. Mike went on to write, a source in the Georgia athletic department told Dog Nation Grant did have discussions about becoming a position coach with the Bulldogs. The offensive coordinator position, though, was never on the table. Once again, that's Mike Griffith from DogNation.com. Now, I have no idea who Mike's source is on this, but I have no reason to doubt that the source is anything other than rock solid, because the one thing I believe I know to be true is that Georgia was very happy with James Coley as a recruiter and was never going to do anything over the course of this offseason to anger him. Bringing in somebody like Eddie Grant to be Coley's boss, that probably wouldn't set well with a guy that had a chance to leave for big money for Texas A&M a year ago and chose not to do that. I think that Georgia always had in its plans to do right by James Coley. But ultimately, all of this probably doesn't matter all that much, because for those of us who really follow the world of college football, and I mean the soap opera behind the scenes, most of this stuff is just semantic based, right? Georgia does reach out to Grant, hey, would you have some interest in coming on and being a part of this program? And then Grant turns that into, I was offered the UGA offensive coordinator job and I turned it down. But if you really follow this stuff really closely, the one thing you know is there are very few instances ever in college athletics of somebody truly being given a contract to sign for a job if the other party doesn't know that the coach in question is going to accept that. That's just not the way that things work. I agree with Mike's assertion in his Dog Nation piece that all of this seems like, to me, an attempt from Grant to parlay to more money from Kentucky, and maybe more important than that, at least from Grant's perspective, parlay this into more favor with Kentucky fans, because there are no shortage of Kentucky websites where a lot of Kentucky fans just aren't that happy with Eddie Grant. They ran the ball pretty well a year ago, but the overall offensive numbers were not very good, and offensive coordinators get a lot of criticism as it is. There was no shortage of criticism for Grant on Kentucky message boards a year ago, so part of that's in place when it comes to this. Plus the whole notion that, hey, Eddie Grant is a part of something that's being built grand and big at Kentucky, that would seem to be conflicted with the fact that didn't the defensive coordinator leave for like some position coach job in the NFL? If something grand and great's being built at Kentucky, why is this no-name defensive coordinator leaving to go be some anonymous position coach in the NFL? None of that really seems to make sense. But more important than that, than what really may have happened between Eddie Grant and Georgia, is the way that Grant's handling this now. I think there's reason to believe that Kirby Smart is probably none too happy with this whatsoever. I don't know that. I haven't talked to Kirby Smart on this subject, but I do have some evidence from the past that Kirby kind of coaches with a little bit of an edge. Kirby seems to find lots of reasons not to like the guy on the other sideline. I can't play this video because it's profane, but remember the video, the slow motion at the end of the Florida game this past year, where he's going out to shake hands with Dan Mullen? He doesn't know he's on camera, but he kind of gives his thoughts of what I'm assuming is the Florida coaching staff as he's getting ready to walk across the field. That's kind of a classic moment. There was the fake field goal late in the game against Auburn. Strategically, it served no purpose. It just seemed to many people to be an opportunity to rub Auburn's face in another dominant win for Georgia on the Tigers. Gus Malzahn was asked about it at the end of that game in Athens in November. Malzahn certainly seemed to be bothered by it. Here's what Malzahn said then.
What are your thoughts on Georgia faking the field goal when they were up 17 and the game was in hand?
No, that, you know, they coach their team and we coach ours. I don't have any comment on that.
So from Malzahn's perspective, it certainly seems there that he thought that Kirby might be trying to tack on a little extra point, a little extra damage. And if that's what Kirby was willing to do to Auburn in 2018, I think that Kentucky, when it comes to Athens in 2019, could be in a similar position. After all, Kirby Smart has let it slip before that he embraces the idea of revenge. Let's go back to 2017. Remember all the losses that Georgia suffered in 2016? And around here, we had talked up the idea of the revenge tour in 2017. Getting a measure of revenge against the teams that had beaten Georgia a year ago. Well, during that 2017 season, Kirby Smart pretended week after week after week there was no such thing as a revenge tour. He has no idea what anybody's talking about. But once Georgia put the final punctuation mark on that, a 38-7 win against Georgia Tech, Kirby did kind of admit, you know what, maybe there was a little revenge here going on. Here's Kirby then.
You know, you guys make a big deal about a revenge tour. We try not to make it about that, but we checked the last box on that list. today, and it meant a lot to send these seniors out the right way. I mean, I still have memories of Nick Chubb sitting in my office and telling me why he's coming back. So I wanted it more for him than for anybody, to send him out the right way, and really all of them, but it's just Nick specifically said he couldn't sleep at night thinking about it and gave him an opportunity to go to sleep now.
I love that at the end. It gives Nick Chubb a chance to sleep now because he couldn't sleep after Tech had beaten Georgia in 2016. The overall point of all of this is you just heard Kirby Smart embracing the notion of revenge, and you've seen some evidence from 2018 that Kirby Smart doesn't mind tacking on the extra score, or at least attempting to tack on the extra score at the end of the game for a coach that he doesn't like. My assumption is that Eddie Grand is now in the category of coaches that Kirby Smart does not like. I don't think you use Georgia for your own benefit without facing some measure of retribution from that when you face the Bulldogs on the field. Kentucky's got to come to Athens this year. They got blown out last year with more talent they're going to have when they face the Bulldogs in 2019, and I think that Kirby Smart might be able to dial up any score he wants against Kentucky, and I'm guessing that the Wildcats offense may have a very hard time finding any breathing room there that day. So Kirby will never admit it. He'll pretend he doesn't know anything about it. But take a look at that final score when Georgia and Kentucky get together this season. My guess is it may be a little bit of an eye-opening deal as Georgia probably tacks on some extra points to let Eddie Grand know exactly how Kirby Smart feels about him. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, pretty much wherever podcasts can be found, including the world-famous DogNation.com, the Apple Podcast Player, the Android devices, the Google Podcast Player, whatever else. We're just glad to have you part of the program. Really appreciate you being with us. We'll have Mike Griffith coming up in just a moment. Mike, of course, had some of the reporting initially on the Eddie Grand situation. Mike's also got some great stuff, having spent some time in Indianapolis for the NFL Scouting Combine. That'll be a busy conversation with Mike coming up. In fact, let me sort of lead into the Mike conversation as we start around the doghouse here today, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, with some of the stuff that Mike had going back from the NFL Scouting Combine. Now, one of my favorite things about this is it's not just a chance to find out how guys are going to do at the NFL level and what they're going to do when they get to the pros. It's also a chance to find out about what they thought about their time at Georgia. Some of the stuff that either guys that don't speak to the media a lot or guys that when they do speak to the media, the reins from the program are kind of held pretty tightly. This is a chance to kind of loosen up and share some more opinions about what you really think about the situation with Georgia football. We heard an example of that yesterday when it comes to DeAndre Baker admitting that, yes, the Georgia players wanted to wear the black jerseys every single Saturday, and he didn't think that Kirby Smart was ever going to do that. And, of course, that's a debate to be had, and it's one of those things where I guess my stance has probably softened over the years. I'm pretty significant traditionalist. I like things to stay the way they are. Georgia's got a traditional uniform. I like it when it wears it, but I do think the black jerseys kind of look cool, and I do appreciate the fact that many fans want to see Georgia wear them. So as I guess get a little older, I start to soften up a bit, and all of a sudden I say, well, if the majority of people want to do this and if Georgia players want to do this, who am I to stand in the way of it? It's just an example, I guess, of how my edges have kind of softened over the years. I'm a little bit the same way on the subject of the Georgia-Florida game, because y'all know that, and I say this at the end of every show, that I believe that a good Georgia fan's a Gator hater. I believe that Georgia's most important rival is Florida, and I believe that it's a great measuring stick for how the Georgia program is doing. And in addition to being a big believer in the nature of the rivalry, I'm also a real fan of the pageantry around the rivalry. I love the fact that there aren't many games like the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. This neutral site, 50-50 split in Jacksonville, where dog fans have had so much fun over the years. That, to me, is a heritage worth preserving. However, I acknowledge that many fans don't necessarily feel that way anymore. If you put this to a vote democratically, I'm actually not sure which side would win, the keeping in Jacksonville side or the moving into home and home side. I honestly don't know. I was interested, though, to hear DeAndre Baker weigh in on this topic. Mike Griffith had a chance to speak to him. Now, first of all, Baker, you'll love the fact that he really embraces the Florida rivalry. But then Mike, who'll join us in a minute, also pushes Bake on the notion of where do you want to see the game played, and DeAndre Baker didn't hold back his opinion. This is pretty interesting from the NFL Scouting Combine. You can read more about this from Mike Griffith at DogNation.com. You can see the full video also on the Dog Nation YouTube page, but here's a little snippet of DeAndre Baker's thoughts on the Georgia-Florida rival. Take a listen.
I say Florida because I'm from Florida, and I think that's the biggest rival other than Tennessee. but Florida to beat his rival for us.
Mecole Hardman said he'd like to see the Florida game go home and home to make it more personal. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would have loved that if it was home. We go and beat them in their stadium.
So, first of all, I love the fact that DeAndre Baker sees the value in going into someone else's stadium and beating them there. I mean, after all, Baker was a guy that played big for Georgia on the road a season ago. Remember how Debo Samuel had said all that stuff about DeAndre Baker not knowing who he was, and Baker made his presence felt right away in Columbia Williams-Brice Stadium last September. This is a guy who likes being in opposing stadiums and likes silencing that that hostile home crowd that doesn't like the Bulldogs. So you like the idea that Baker says that. You know, I'm going to be careful, though, to get too out in front of the idea of taking this game out of Jacksonville, because it's a heritage and a pedigree that I've always really appreciated. But it's hard to deny that that Mecole Hardman, who Mike quoted from there, and you can read more about that at DogNation.com, Baker and the audio you just heard, these guys fully embrace the notion of, hey, let's play that game in our stadium and let's go see what the swamp is like. Hard to ignore what those Georgia players are saying. That's kind of interesting stuff. And it's Around the Doghouse. It's presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know what they do. It's foundation repair. It's basement waterproofing. It's crawl space encapsulation. They also offer a lifetime of support. So whether you've got a cracked foundation or a wet basement or a damp crawl space, you can have one of their qualified professional technicians come out to your home and give it a look over and tell you exactly what you need to do. I know it may sound intimidating and daunting, but the truth is, it's not going to be as hard to fix as you might think. And Engineered Solutions of Georgia is the ones you want to trust to get it done, because they're the only ones that have a full-time engineer on staff. That is why they're the ones we trust here around Dog Nation. And the better news, it is really easy to get in touch with them. Just simply give them a call. It's 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. All right, for more on this and a whole lot more of the aftermath from the scouting combine in Indianapolis where he was on the scene, let's talk to our buddy Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Mike Griffith, and as I do, I'll also remind you that coming up later on, I'll announce two winners of our Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway. We'll do that with two folks coming up in a moment, and I'll tell you how you can win one again today. So it's busy for us coming up later on here today on Dog Nation Daily. And, Mike, I want to talk to you about the audio that our audience just heard of DeAndre Baker and his thoughts on Georgia-Florida and what Mecole Hardman also had to say about this. But let me call a quick audible and kind of transition before we get into that. I also spoke about the Eddie Grand stuff again off the top of the program. Grand kind of doubled down on that again yesterday. Before I get into the other stuff, do you have any thoughts on what Grand had to say, given the fact that your reporting on this was so instrumental in the early portion of the narrative?
Yeah, well, the person I talked to leaves no doubt in my mind. You know that Eddie Grand's not telling the truth. You know, I was told Eddie Grand went back and told Kentucky that so that he could renegotiate a contract, and that the offensive coordinator position at Georgia was never offered. And I don't think any differently. And if I had lied to my boss and told him that I'd been offered a coordinator job to get a raise, I don't think I could lie about it 2 months later either. I didn't see the exact precise quotes from Eddie Grand. If he said I was offered the offensive coordinator job, I didn't necessarily hear those exact words, Brandon. You may have that. I didn't look any deeper into the story. I read a story and I didn't see those quotes. Maybe somebody interpreted that. I'll give Eddie Grand the benefit of the doubt. I didn't see an exact quote that said I was offered the offensive coordinator job at Georgia. I saw him say I chose to stay here because I liked it. And maybe he didn't correct the person that asked the question, but I have zero doubt that Georgia did not offer him that job, and I have a source that I believe is bulletproof on that, that I don't think has any reason to lie about his university.
So according to Kentucky.com, Grand does say yesterday that it was serious, the conversation with the UGA, and the point that they offered the job. So that is what he says. He says they offered the job. And, Mike, before you joined us, I speculated on the fact that while I don't know Kirby Smart's thinking on this, and it may be wrong for me to presume to know Kirby Smart's thinking on this, my guess is he's not happy seeing Grand try to use Georgia publicly the way that Grand seemingly has here. And my guess is there may be a little extra oomph behind that game when Kentucky comes to Athens this season. That's my assumption. Would you care to speculate on that?
I don't know how Kirby feels about it. I know he wants to beat everybody. I don't think this is the first or probably the last time that a coach has tried to use an opportunity where he interviewed with the school to his advantage. again, did he say he was offered the offensive coordinator job, Brandon? Were those his exact words?
The code itself doesn't say offensive coordinator, but the question was about the offensive coordinator, so maybe that gives him some wiggle room.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of wiggle room, and I think he's trying to use it to his advantage. And again, if he sold his athletic director on the fact that he was offered a position to get a raise and renegotiate, that's fine. But sometimes all you got to do is use a little common sense. And if anybody believes that Kirby Smart was going to hire the offensive coordinator of an offense that finished 103rd in the nation the last 2 years, 103rd in the nation, and Georgia was over a guy on his staff like James Coley that he gave an exorbitant raise to that was already making $850,000 a year as an assistant coordinator and position coach, if anybody believes that, then I got some beachfront property in Tennessee I want to sell you, because sometimes all it takes is a little common sense.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point. Let me transition to something else we just heard. That was DeAndre Baker, your question to him, talking about the Georgia-Florida rivalry. And, Mike, this is a complicated subject for me because, on the one hand, I acknowledge the recruiting value of hosting an opponent like Florida in your own stadium five times over the course of a decade. There's some real value to that, even if Georgia opened itself up to hosting recruits in Jacksonville, which the two programs have agreed not to do. It's nowhere near as valuable to host recruits in a neutral site stadium as it is to host recruits in your own stadium. I acknowledge that. And Georgia got some scheduling challenges. There's an imbalance between the odd years and the even years in terms of the programs that Georgia gets to host every single year. So changing Georgia-Florida to a home-and-home could also potentially positively impact that. However, I am a bit of a traditionalist, especially for cool traditions. I think the cocktail party is one of the coolest in all of college football, Georgia notwithstanding. I think it's really interesting to hear all the chatter that seems to grow about moving this to a home and home. You know, I can't support it, but I can't deny that there seems to be a lot of talk about it lately. What's your reaction to it, having spoken to a lot of principals involved with this?
Well, first things first, it depends on what your priority is. So you have to understand whoever's making the argument, is it about what's best for them and their family, or is it about what's going to make Georgia the most competitive and best football team? Because as Kirby Smart said on his radio show, you're giving up a pivotal recruiting weekend every other year. And if we're talking about three or four players that commit, and then we're talking about three or four players, you ask yourself, what could three or four big players committing mean to Georgia football? Top-line players, because that would be prime-time key official visit weekend. And I want to make this clear, because I think there's something that gets a little confused here. It's not necessarily that these programs agree not to. They cannot, by NCAA rule, you cannot pay for a recruit to go to a neutral site game. That is against NCAA rules, okay? So you can fly a guy and his family in to come to Georgia. You can wine and dine him. You can put him in a hotel. You can show him the campus. You can take him around downtown Athens, which I said on national television yesterday is the best college town in the country, and I believe that. And I've been to almost all of them, B.A. You're not going to find a better scene than downtown Athens with these restaurants and pubs and shops. And there's something for it's an incredible. It's like an amusement. You feel like you're in an Epcot or something. It is the most beautiful downtown in the country, okay? And you're taking a game weekend away from that town. You're taking the revenue away from this city, from the schools, from the sidewalks. The taxpayers pick it up. So, but going back to the official visit weekend, you don't have time for that down there. The kids can come to the game, they sit in the end zone, they hear the coach talk for 5 minutes, and Georgia flies in and they fly out. It's nothing near what the value of an official visit weekend is. So understand the value of what you're giving up there. The kids' opportunity to come to Athens, to see the dorm, to see the facilities, to walk around the campus, to meet the professors, to bring his family, to spend an entire weekend with the coach, with a teammate, a future teammate in front of him. So that's number one, because that's the argument Kirby makes. Because you're weighing that value of that official visit weekend for how many kids? 40, 50? And you may land three or four of them versus the fans get to go to the beach. So what's the value? And the tradition, oh, there's a tradition to it. There is a tradition to it. But the players are telling you, Hey, we want to go in the other team's stadium. They want to see the Swamp. They want that home game every other year. So it is a tough debate. It's the, you know, there's fans who have the traditions that like to go to the beach. But you know what those fans want, BA? They want a national championship.
Well,
they want Kirby to win it all. They're paying him to win it all. They're paying him to make decisions. They're going to help Georgia win a national championship.
Well,
so that's where we're at.
To be fair, on a couple quick points on this, though, while I agree with you completely that, you know, it's a missed opportunity not having that extra home game to recruit five times over the course of the decade, there's no evidence that Georgia's lost a recruit over not having that. And I'm not going to be so quick to disregard the feelings of fans who do enjoy this. After all, over the course of the last 5 years or so, I've watched a lot of things that the average fan enjoys around Georgia football kind of disappear, and some of that's just the cost of doing business. But I'm not going to quickly sweep under the rug or quickly disregard what a lot of Georgia fans, you know, have enjoyed. There's a lot that happens around the Georgia program that benefits the high-end donor, that benefits the, you know, the athletic association itself, maybe less stuff every year that actually benefits the average rank-and-file fan. There are a lot of Georgia fans who really like that trip to the beach, and I'm not going to be quick to disregard their feelings on that.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you, you know, but a lot of things have changed since 1934. Now you've got an extra game. You know, those Georgia fans that we're talking about, you know, they love to support the Dogs. And now there's an SEC championship game. And now there's a college football playoff. And so maybe you don't get to go to the beach in Jacksonville 1 year. Maybe instead you're going to the beach in Southern California because you're in the Rose Bowl in the playoffs. Or maybe you're going to Miami in the first round of the college football playoff. Or maybe it's San Diego or Santa Clara. Who knows? But it used to be in 1934 when the tradition, well, actually the tradition started in Macon, Georgia. That's where they first met. I don't hear anybody championing that. But if we want to go on, but things have changed. There's now an SEC championship game to account for. There's now the potential of a playoff game and a national championship game. It used to be, it was just a ball game. But it's not that way anymore. So I understand what you're saying. The good news for me and you is, whether no matter what you think, no matter what I think, we're not the ones that are going to decide it.
Sure.
The guy that's going to decide it, he makes $6 million a year, and he played for the University of Georgia. And I don't think anybody would disagree that Kirby Smart has Georgia's best interest at heart.
It's going to be a very interesting story to watch play out in the years ahead, for sure. Let me transition and talk about something different. I thought the single most interesting thing to come out of your reporting from Indianapolis, the scouting combine, was probably what Jonathan Ledbetter had to say about the future of the Georgia defense with Dan Lanning at the helm. I thought it was really interesting to hear from Ledbetter, and you can read this, folks who haven't seen it, at dognation.com. Good piece from Mike Griffith up on that. But Ledbetter gets into Kirby Smart's push and challenge for more quarterback pressure, for more sacks. I guess the one thing I might slightly take issue with is the idea that it's going to require blitzing to do that. I think Kirby Smart in the past has talked about his desire to rush the quarterback with four pass rushers, not bring that extra guy. We talked in the show yesterday that when you do that, you potentially set yourself up for a different problem because all of a sudden you have fewer guys in pass coverage, for instance. But nonetheless, Mike, I thought it was really interesting to hear Ledbetter be so open about what Kirby Smart was saying at the end of last year of, we got to get to the quarterback a little bit more. You're standing there 2 inches from him while he's saying all of this. What was your reaction to all of that?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. You know, in the flip side to your point, B.A., is, you know, Georgia was the best in the country when it came to giving up plays of 20 yards or more. That Georgia gave up fewer than anybody. You weren't going to get the cheap and easy touchdown off of Georgia last year. And that was all part of the Kirby Smart scheme and, you know, chestnut checkers. So to your point, yes, optimally, you want to be able to get a pass rush with four guys and not have to blitz. But let's be honest, the Georgia personnel last year wasn't good enough to do that very often, and that's why they were next to last in the SEC in the number of sacks with 22. DeAndre Walker, I believe, had 7.5. That's not blowing up any scouts' eyes. You saw where D. Orlando Ledbetter, our NFL Falcons writer for the AJC Dog Nation team, said that DeAndre Walker could be a guy without a position. He didn't win enough of those battles on just speed. Now, I think what Ledbetter was saying was, you know, next year you've got some different personnel, and now all of a sudden these five stars, okay, they're coming up into the rotation. I think we're going to see some guys that are going to win that battle, but I do think Georgia will blitz more. I do think they'll take more chances because, B.A., I think in the big picture, this Georgia offense is going to be a little bit more up-tempo. So whereas before, maybe, you know, Kirby and Mel Tucker talked about how they really schemed around what they had. They didn't really get to do everything they wanted coming in. They had to scheme with what they had. Now Kirby's starting to get the dream team talent that he's always wanted, and we're going to get to see a little bit more, and the defense get a little bit more complex with what they do moving forward. So I do think there will be some pressures added into the package. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be called, but I think Kirby has more of this type of talent that he wants and needs to run the things that he wants to do.
Not a great 40 time for Elijah Holyfield at the combine. Same can be said for Isaac Nada. Both those guys could have chosen to stay in school for their senior season. Now, it's hard to understand how that would have gotten much faster had they stayed. But is the combine performance for these guys from the speed standpoint, is that evidence that maybe Holyfield and Nada made a mistake by leaving school early?
I don't think Holyfield did. I'm with you. I don't think he was going to get any faster, tougher, stronger, or better leader. I think he's going to make a team because of his toughness and his grit. Maybe not because of what he does in the 100-yard dash or the 40-yard dash for that matter. But I think Isaac Nada would have benefited. I don't know the family situation, and it's easy for us to say this, because let's just say ESPN came along and said, BA, we're going to give you your own show at whatever time slot you want. You don't got to move your family. You sit right, you do it. You got your dream job. We're going to give you a 4-year deal right now worth $500,000. Or if you wait a year, we might still have it, and we'll pay you $750,000.
Sure.
I mean, look, the windows of opportunity for all of us, we have to consider. And for these kids, this is something they've been dreaming of. This is a chance for them to do something for their family and change their life. It's like holding a winning lottery ticket. Say, hey, you just won $1 million, but guess what? There's a 95% chance you're going to win $1.5 million in another year. Hard not to cash that ticket in your hand. Now, I think Isaac would have benefited, if we're talking apples to apples and just assuming that he, take the human factor out of it, there's zero chance he's going to get injured. There's zero chance he's going to get in a car accident or fall down the stairs or do anything that would derail an NFL career. Sure, I think he would have improved his NFL draft stock. But would he have improved it enough to mitigate those percentages and outweigh those potential risks? What if it was your kid? So I have a hard time second-guessing players because I don't know everything going on in their personal lives, and I don't know their risk tolerance. But could he benefit it? Sure, he could have benefited. But does that mean he should have come back? Not if that would have been in the back of his mind. So I don't like playing the second-guess game. I do think Isaac and Elijah both had very disappointing combines. Elijah was strong and did the bench press, and that was about it. We didn't see the explosivity out of either one of them. Really, the only guy that I thought had a great combine was Nicole Hardman. Other than that, not to be Debbie Downer, but other than that, the Georgia players really didn't fare that well relative to other schools and how they did in their 40s and their measured times.
Let me finish up with this, Mike. Your piece, it's up at DogNation.com right now, where Terry Godwin, Mecole Hardman, some of those departing wide receivers look back on the crop that's still at UGA. And I thought that article was really interesting for a specific reason. Mike, I do this show every single day, and I talk to people on the video comment section every single day, and there are a couple names that always seem to bubble up with questions from UGA fans about what Matt Landers is going to do. Matt's been a star of the scout team for the last couple of years. Tommy Bush was a really impressive four-star signee from the 2018 class who's got the look of a Javon Wims, a tall guy who can run. That seems to be a pretty good recipe for the wide receiver position. A lot of fans really like Landers. A lot of fans really like Bush. It was interesting to hear both Godwin and Hardman in their own way mention both these guys as potential breakouts for Georgia this upcoming season. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I kind of expected to hear those names. Of course, we all know J.J. Holloman is going to be the leader, and I think, the thing that I thought of, and not to derail your train of thought here, I wondered why nobody was talking about Demetrius Robertson. I didn't hear his name, and I didn't want to follow up and ask, because then it wouldn't have been a very genuine interview if I asked the open-ended question. Who are some guys we're going to hear from? And that was what they said. Now, maybe they were under the impression that I was looking for younger guys' names. I don't know what they were thinking, but I thought it was really odd that nobody mentioned Demetrius Robertson's name. You know, sometimes when a guy comes in from the outside with all that hype, and I'm not saying that this happened, but I have seen this happen before, there's a little jealousy in the room. You know, the guys, you know, the neck hair stand up. Why is everybody talking about Demetrius Robertson? I've been here 2 or 3 years at Georgia. Why isn't anybody talking about me, right? You know, how's Dwan Mathis feeling right now? Oh, this new quarterback's come in. Oh, he's recruiting. He's 2 years away. He ain't even signed yet. But he's getting more attention. Sometimes, and I don't know that it happens. I know that sometimes that happens with young men that are 18, 19, 20, 21. And it makes me wonder, you know, is there an issue with Demetrius Robertson in the receiver room? Why isn't anybody talking about this guy? Why aren't the teammates championing him? Now, if you ask about him, hey, what about Demetrius Robertson? Oh, yeah, he's great. But you ask the open-ended question, who are the guys that are going to step up next year? Nobody said Demetrius Robertson. That was curious to me. To the other guys, obviously, they're going to come along. I thought that Mecole Hardman's quote, he said something about if he can get the playbook down. You know, that kind of told me, okay, maybe this guy doesn't watch enough film, or maybe he didn't get the schemes, or maybe he blew a couple routes. You know, these are the things, though, when players go into programs, they've got to learn. I had somebody ask me about Quay Walker, linebacker, the other day. Quay Walker told us after the SEC title game, learn in a new position. We sometimes just assume these guys can come in and know the playbook and know everything to do, and that's not necessarily the case. So, yeah, I think everyone should be excited about Landers. Tyler Simmons, I think. Kyrus Jackson, I think, in addition to J.J. Holloman. And I do think Demetrius Robertson will get on the field.
Mike, it should be very interesting to see how it plays out. Great reporting from Indianapolis. We appreciate the fun content at DogNation.com, and we will look forward to speaking to you back here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon.
Thanks, B.A. I appreciate it, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting to hear these guys referencing Bush and Landers, because for those of you who are regulars in our video comment section, you know just how, especially in the case of Tommy Bush, that's a name that comes up a lot. And some of that is criticism towards me, because a lot of people think I don't mention him enough when we talk about those potential breakout receivers for this upcoming year. But the fact that, you know, these two guys that presumably know that room really well mentioned both Landers and Bush, I think for a lot of Georgia fans, they're going to really like that idea. They're going to really like thinking about that. The one thing that we do know, and obviously at this point we have spent a good bit of time talking about, the one thing that we do know is somebody breaking out, somebody having a big year is really important for Georgia. I think you have twin pillar issues facing the Dogs. One of these we talked about yesterday, the need to sack the quarterback more, just get after, be in the backfield more in general, tackles for loss. The other side of that is on the other side of the ball, where Georgia needs more big throws and catches. 20-plus yards down the field, Georgia needs more of those. And because of the size, the height that both Landers and Bush have, they're going to look the part of being guys that can fit in and do that. We'll see who emerges. It's one of the things going to make spring practice really fun for UGA this year. All right, let's do our SEC through. Before that, let me remind you of one thing. Kroger's got the great Kroger Chef Jr. coming up this month. A couple of great experiences for a guided kids cooking experience. Now, when you sign up for this, you get a bunch of cool stuff. You get an apron and patch, a chef's hat, a recipe card box, and a spatula. Who couldn't use another spatula in their life? It's all just $7. And in March, it's chicken salad that Kroger's featuring. It's coming up March 16th. So you got March 16th coming up for the Kroger Chef Jr. event. Please check out KrogerChefJr.com. That's the website for more information on that. You can find the locations that are participating, and you can reserve your spot. It's KrogerChefJr.com. All right, a couple of SEC stories to get to, and then we will give away a Road to Atlanta t-shirt. We're actually going to give away two today, and we'll announce how we're going to give away another one for tomorrow's show. I saw where Daniel Jeremiah, who's one of those guys that's kind of, you know, really worked hard, worked his way up the ranks as an analyst. He works for NFL.com, NFL Network, and he was doing one of these things on TV where they're just debating back and forth. And Jeremiah, who knows college football, who knows the Southern scene pretty well, had this little nugget, this little line about Tennessee. He says, "You put 110,000 fans in the stands and you can't put one dude in the combine?" And first of all, that's a great line for TV. It kind of has the feel of a hot take. But the honest truth is, I think not having anyone at the combine for Tennessee is the kind of thing that could stick to that program a bit. And, you know, I can't help but think about how we're in this day and age now where when an analyst says something good about a program, a lot of programs will take that quote and put that on social media, and it kind of becomes their own kind of social media edit touting themselves. My guess is the Tennessee official Twitter account's not going to be putting out this line from Daniel Jeremiah, but Being the kind of place where would-be pro prospects go to die is not a good brand for a program. That's probably going to change. I mean, the Vols have recruited pretty well the last couple of years under Jeremy Pruitt. My guess is they're going to start sending more guys to the combine. That would obviously seem to be the case. But in the immediate, this is the kind of thing that negative recruiting, I think it kind of works because, you know, guys do see the guys from another program all over the NFL network heading into something like this. When the that big orange power T's not represented at all, that's not a great look. Not a great look for Tennessee, and it's kind of funny to see Daniel Jeremiah taking a jab at them there and that. Spring practice is pretty well getting ready to get going all around the SEC, and ESPN had an interesting article looking at the top quarterback competitions to be playing out among college football this year, and especially during spring practice. And if I had to say, as a Georgia fan, the non-Georgia story that's maybe most important right now, my thought would be it's how Auburn's quarterback position plays out. Now, ESPN points out that Bo Nix coming in as a freshman. You got Malik Willis, who's been there for a while. Joey Gatewood, who's been there for a while. They also mentioned Court Sandberg, who's like 30 years old. I probably don't think enough about Sandberg when it comes to a competition like this, but he's there as well. I guess the honest truth is I don't even know who the point spread favorite is on this. I mean, from a reputation standpoint, Bo Nix may have the best overall reputation, but a lot of that's based on the fact that he just came into the program. At one point in time, Joey Gatewood was thought to be a big recruit. I'm honestly not even sure he's a quarterback. The fact of the matter is, if Malik Willis was good, he would have already played more than he has, because there was plenty of time last season where Auburn wasn't that happy with Jarrett Stidham, despite the fact that Stidham may end up finding a home in the NFL. But I think the ESPN's correct to point out the Auburn issue. And I think if you're a Georgia fan, to the extent that you can stomach paying attention to what's going on with some of your SEC rivals, Auburn's pursuit of a quarterback is one of those stories that's going to go a long way towards determining just how challenging that trip for Georgia for the final time in the month of November is to Jordan-Hare Stadium later on this season. That's worth getting into. Let me do two other really quick stories for a second. Brett McMurphy, the longtime college football reporter now working for Stadium, I think it's called, he's reporting that there's a big change coming to the Las Vegas Bowl. That for the longest time, the Las Vegas Bowl has been like Pac-12, Mountain West, all these schools west of the Mississippi. But I guess in the future, it's going to have a different kind of tie-in. If I understand this correctly, and there's a very good chance that I'm not, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to alternate appearances in the Las Vegas Bowl so that when one of those conferences is not represented in Las Vegas, it's going to come to Charlotte and play in the Belk Bowl, which historically has been an SEC Bowl. How cool would it be in an otherwise bad season, because the Las Vegas Bowl is played fairly early in December. This is not a major bowl. But how cool would it be to think that you got that as a consolation prize? You go 7-5, but you go to Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Bowl? I mean, who wouldn't love that? I've always been of a believer that there's this weird thing in college where if you look at, like, the bowl calendar, the best destinations are often the worst bowls. Like, you look at those games that get played in early December. It's the Bahamas. It's Las Vegas. I think that New Mexico would be kind of a cool place to go for a bowl, kind of, you know, pretty outdoors type stuff. A lot of the, like, Myrtle Beach. There's a lot of really cool destinations for bowls that go for, like, the bad teams. I don't want to see Georgia go 7-5, but if they went 7-5, you could do a lot worse, end up in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Bowl. So I guess there's that. One more quick final story, and this is not SEC related, but it's probably worth paying attention to. Jim Delaney, the longtime Big Ten commissioner, is going to step down once his contract as commissioner expires. There is some reason to believe that the Big Ten is not happy with the current playoff dynamic because they've been excluded. The conference champion's been excluded from the playoff, I guess, the last, 2 years? So there is there could be some interest in seeing who emerges as Big Ten commissioner, because that's a power league that has a lot of juice behind it, but as of late has not really been wielding much power in the world of college football. That could be something interesting for SEC fans to pay attention to, and for now we'll make that your SEC through. All right, so here on Dog Nation Daily, I made just a grave error yesterday. I did not draw our winner for our Road to Atlanta t-shirt from the previous day, so I'm going to give away two t-shirts right now, and then I am going to talk about how we can give away another T-shirt later on. So first of all, let me kind of give you an idea of what's going on here, what we're doing. And if you're listening radio or podcast, realize you can't see this, but I'm going to show the T-shirt to the video audience once again. If you do listen to the show normally, it wouldn't be a bad idea to kind of dial into the video show kind of late here and as we head to head towards the end of the program, just so you can see what this Road to Atlanta T-shirt looks like. I personally think, with all due respect, this may be the best looking T-shirt design we've had. Now, I'll always be partial to the Gator Hater idea, but I love the Road to Atlanta T-shirt design, and I also love the belief that's where George is getting back to, that the 2019 season is all about getting back on that road to Atlanta again and finally knocking off the Alabama Crimson Tide. That's the nemesis that's kind of standing in George's way, and Atlanta's the place that's going to happen. Mercedes-Benz Stadium is the venue where that's going to take place. So this offseason, we're celebrating that notion, and we're paying close attention to that, and we're giving away these Road to Atlanta T-shirts as a way to do that. So let me congratulate two winners right now. First, via email from the other day, it's Allison W. Allison, congratulations to you. You're a big winner. And for yesterday's contest, congratulations to Kevin Craig. We'll be in touch with both of you on picking up your T-shirt. Allison W. And the reason why it just says Allison W. is because that's all the email address said. But I've got the email, so I can contact Allison. And then Kevin Craig as well, congratulations to you on your participation in our contest. And we've got a Road to Atlanta T-shirt coming your way. We really appreciate you being a part of that. Now, I want to be as inclusive as we can be for our Road to Atlanta giveaway moving forward. So we're trying to do some different things every single day. And I want to go back now to a method we've used before to give away T-shirts. I'm simply going to tweet out today's show, a link to the podcast, a little later on from my Twitter account, Dog Nation Daily. If you'll do me a favor and retweet that, I'll take the list of all the retweets, I'll kind of put them there in a name, in a pile, I'll draw one out, and that will be the way that we give today's Road to Atlanta T-shirt away. So look for a tweet from me, at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. When you see that, please just retweet that just to increase the awareness of the show for a lot of Georgia fans who may not know this is going on during the offseason. Let's remind them about that. And for your efforts, I'll take all the names, I'll draw one out, and we'll announce another Road to Atlanta T-shirt giveaway tomorrow. And we'll try to make the giveaways as different as possible because some of you aren't on Facebook, some of you aren't on YouTube. Now, we hope that you join a lot of these platforms, but for those of you that are sort of excluded from one platform, we'll try to make it easy for you on the other. So do that for today, and we'll give away another Road to Atlanta T-shirt for tomorrow. Now, speaking of yesterday's giveaway, I was really interested in the responses to the topic about Vince Dooley. And my question, just based on some of the stuff you've heard of the last couple of days, both what Coach Dooley said about this topic at DogNation.com, what Chip Tower said about this topic when he joined us on Dog Nation Daily on Monday, about whether the field at Sanford Stadium... Excuse me, apologize for that. Whether the field at Sanford Stadium should be renamed in honor of Vince Dooley. And I expected to see a lot of passionate yeses. I got some of those. I got some no's, though. And a lot of this was based on the fact that Sanford Stadium already has a name. There's no reason to change that. I kind of understand where that comes from. Here's my concern, though, that the time in which Dooley was athletic director and coach has passed so much that people seem to have forgotten the contribution he made to UGA. We'll probably talk more about this in the days ahead. By the way, 858 days, that's how long it's been since Florida's beating Georgia's our Gator Hitter Updater. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Dog Nation Daily.